Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to DSM conference call. Throughout today's presentation, all participants will be in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To register for questions, you may dial star one at any time. If any participant has difficulty in hearing the conference, please press 00 on your push button phone. Now I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Stephen Houghton. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Monique. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this conference call on DSM's results for the first quarter of 2017, which we published early this morning. I'm sure you've seen the press release that we put out. With me this morning is Geraldine Matchett, our CFO and a member of the Managing Board. She will elaborate briefly on the results, and after that, of course, is available to answer your questions. We have until 8:30 this morning at the latest, so we'll get going. But as a quick reminder, today's presentation can contain forward-looking statements, and in that regard, I need to point you to our disclaimer regarding forward-looking statements as published on the website and also in our press releases. Without further ado, I'd like to hand the call over to Geraldine. Geraldine, please go ahead.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome from my side as well. Before we get started with the question and answer session, I'd like to briefly highlight some of the key points of our announcement this morning. We've had a very good start to the year. All businesses delivered strong growth, resulting in an adjusted EBITDA increase of 17% to $345 million and an improved ROCE of 11.3%. This was achieved on the back of the nutrition business continuing to deliver on its growth ambitions and the materials business demonstrating once again the success of its focus on specialties. Given our continued focus on driving financial performance, I'm pleased to also report that the cash from operating activities was up 43% to $196 million, and that our net profit increased significantly, up 75%. In parallel, we continue to manage our business for the longer term by pursuing innovation-driven growth. Regarding the outlook for 2017, despite the current global socioeconomic volatility, we are confident that we will be able to deliver against our full-year objectives, given our focus on growth initiatives and our extensive and ambitious profit improvement programs. Thereby maintaining our outlook as stated, DSM aims to deliver high single-digit percentage adjusted EBITDA growth and a high double-digit basis point ROCE growth in line with our targets set out in our strategy 2018. Now, moving to a few specific comments on our businesses, starting with nutrition. As I said, nutrition continued to deliver on its growth ambitions. Sales increased by 12%, driven predominantly by organic growth, with both animal and human nutrition showing good volume progression, although this was partly helped by the timing of orders. The adjusted EBITDA for nutrition was up 14%, resulting from this good organic growth, our profit improvement programs, as well as foreign exchange. The margin increased to 18.4% for the quarter. Turning to materials, our materials business demonstrated again this quarter the success of its focus on specialties, reporting an exceptionally high volume growth of 11%. This growth was driven by strong demand from specialty materials in our resins, engineering plastics, and Dyneema businesses, as well as from some stocking effects in parts of the value chain. Now, it is fair to say that we had an easier comparative period in Q1 2016 when there was weak growth. Nonetheless, also taking this into account, our Q1 2017 volume growth was very strong. Now, the pricing developments up 3% relates mainly to the higher input costs, although these higher input costs were only partially reflected in our customer pricing during the quarter. Strong organic growth of 14% combined with a slightly positive foreign exchange resulted in an adjusted EBITDA up 19% versus Q1 2016 and the adjusted EBITDA margin of 16.1%. Now, finally, looking at the financials, our continued focus on improving our financial performance resulted in another good quarter, with our operating cash flow improving to $196 million, up 43%. The operating working capital continued to progress in the right direction at 24% of sales compared to 24.4% in Q1 2016. With that, I would like to open the floor for questions. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. For questions or remarks, please press star one. First question is from Mr. Bart Koster, ABN Financial News. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for the availability. I was just wondering if you can say anything about the development of volumes and prices in the second quarter. Second question is, how about divestment of your joint venture non-core business activities? The final question is, knowing what is happening to AkzoNobel at the moment, do you foresee any scenario where you will get a non-solicited offer for takeover of DSM? If so, how do you prepare for that, and if you have any protection measures? Those are my three questions. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you for your questions. Now, keeping focused on our Q1 results and your question on volume and price developments. Now, as I've tried to flag in my opening comments, this is a very strong quarter that we're seeing in Q1. We will be seeing over time somewhat of a lesser strong quarter simply because of comparative figures. Maybe if I give a little bit of detail here. If I look at the 11% volume growth in materials, for instance, this was primarily underpinned by a good dynamic in our businesses, but also helped by the fact that Q1 last year had a weaker growth at about 1%. That's something that we have to bear in mind going forward. We have seen some stocking in the value chain along the way, and that is extremely difficult to quantify. We need to see how that evolves over time. Now, if we use as a reference, if you want, the average run rate of the last few quarters in materials, typically we were closer to sort of a 5% sort of average pace, and over time would probably expect to be getting, you know, reverting more to in that direction. We do have to say that we have a good momentum in all three of our materials businesses right now. Yeah. That's mainly that development. Now, in terms of nutrition, we also highlighted in the press release the fact that we've had some favorable comparative figures there as well. Typically in animal nutrition in Latin America, the cutoff of sales was favorable for us. It's just a quarter-on-quarter cut. If we normalize that, the 7% volume would have been more 4%-5% in animal nutrition. In human nutrition there, it was more the timing of vitamin C sales simply linked to production. We had a shutdown last year. Again there, if we normalize, the 7% becomes more around 5%, which by the way is very much our ambition for those businesses in nutrition to be delivering in that range of growth. Hopefully that gives you a bit of color that in terms of certainly those developments, Q1 is on the high side in terms of price volume growth.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Now to your second question on divestments. Now it is entirely right. Part of our strategy that we communicated a year and a half ago, we highlighted that our intention is to monetize our joint ventures and associates. We have three of those. That will follow its course as we go along. Now of course, the one which is the most advanced in the process is our Patheon business.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, as you know. There, I think we have quite repeatedly mentioned that our priority is very much to prioritize value over timing. So we are not in a particular rush, but we want to make sure that we monetize at a good valuation, both for ourselves and our joint venture partners, JLL. So we're fully aligned there, and so we will see how we progress with that. But the direction remains the same, which is that indeed we intend to monetize, particularly that stake. First, the two others will probably be a bit further down the road, to business developments. And in terms of your comment regarding AXA, now, of course, we never comment on other companies. Now, our focus, what's on our daily agenda here at DSM is very much anchoring the transformation that we've been undergoing. We launched this very big reorganization a year and a bit ago, if anything, our biggest concern at this stage is making sure that we don't get distracted. We've had good results in 2016, as you know. Q1 is very strong as well, and we must absolutely anchor those changes in the organization this year in 2017 and not get sidetracked in any way. So that is our top priority at present.
Okay, but knowing that AkzoNobel has a stichting to protect itself for a hostile takeover, does DSM have a similar protection measure, a structure?
As you know, in the Netherlands, there's also all sorts of different kind of arrangements in place under Dutch governance and Dutch law that...
Mm-hmm.
in place to make sure that the interests of all stakeholders are taken into account whenever an event may happen. And these setups are, there's various different kinds around. Now, for more details, the best thing is probably to refer back to the annual reports where these are always very well disclosed arrangements.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question comes from Ms. Ellen Popper of Bloomberg. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. Let me then first come with a follow-up on the question about ExxonMobil, because you indicated that you want to focus on the reorganization and not want to be sidetracked. But ExxonMobil has been focused on its cost-cutting efforts, and that made the company so attractive to being taken over. So aren't you afraid that after this reorganization, you would be financially more attractive to companies to be taken over? So should, in that sense, not be focused on doing acquisitions yourself as well?
Okay, well, once again, we absolutely never comment on other companies, nor do we comment on any kind of speculations, particularly around any kind of M&A developments that could potentially happen. I think in the case of DSM, what is very important is that we set a very clear strategy a year and a half ago that was very well received by our investors. It includes some very ambitious targets. We have been very focused on delivering on those targets. We did more than that last year, and we've got a good start to 2017, so we're very confident that we will be able to deliver in 2017, and that DSM is a growth company that will continue to do well both in nutrition and materials business, and that is really what keeps us busy.
Okay, thank you. And then I have another question about the Brazilian beef investigation. Some analysts pointed out that two of DSM's big customers are part of that investigation and that it may become a drag on the animal health in the second quarter. What's your response to that?
Indeed, so there has been this big scandal on meat in Brazil. It started mid-March. So I think the first comment would be that this hasn't had an impact on our quarter one results, but we are watching it quite carefully for particularly the second quarter. It's such an important industry for the country that, of course, they are addressing the issue very fast. But nonetheless, particularly in the beef parts of the industry, so ruminants, we may see an impact on our results in the second quarter. Difficult to quantify at this stage. We're estimating maybe 3% of our animal sales could be impacted. It's really depend on the speed of response and how this is all going to run its way through the system.
Okay, and 3% of the animal sales may be impacted?
Yeah, in the second quarter. So if we estimate, say, about 20 million euros. But it's a very much a rough estimate at this stage, as we, you know, we can't tell how quickly and how effective the industry will be at responding to the crisis.
And will it continue beyond the second quarter?
Very difficult to tell, as it is such a core sector for the Brazilian economy that, of course, there has been very rapid response. Now, whether it will have lingering effects is, at this stage, very difficult to say. Now, maybe in the case of DSM, it's important to highlight that the poultry element is less of a concern for us because we have a global footprint with anything to do with chicken. So what tends to happen in the food industry is if one geography has an issue, it gets compensated by another. So that is usually, so there we expect some netting effects anyway. The area with maybe a bit more concern is the beef, because we're more concentrated on Latin America, but also it's a rather pragmatic thing. Chickens have a shorter lifespan than beef, and therefore when there is an issue, it takes a bit longer in the beef space to run its way through the system.
Okay, and so it would be a negative drag of 20 million euros, and for how much do you think you can could compensate it?
Well, really our outlook has not been altered because of this, so we're seeing it as an event, but that should not be a major drag on our results, and we're confident to deliver the outlook that we have in the press release, even taking into account this this crisis. Of course, should it completely flare up, that would be different, but as we know it today, it should not have an impact.
Okay, thank you so much.
Next question, Mr. Bart Meyer, ANP. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, and thank you for your time. I had a question on the developments in nutrition, first of all, and the vitamin markets in particular. You already stated that you benefited last quarter from the additional deliveries of the orders from Q4. Now you have a normalized growth of 5%, but what does this volume growth, this normalized growth, tell us about the vitamin market? Is that growing? How are the circumstances in the U.S. in particular?
Okay, so I think really if we step back a little bit and look at the market dynamics, I think that's really where you're trying to go. What we have seen is actually a very robust environment pretty much in all regions except Latin America, and we've just touched upon it with the beef, well, the meat scandal, but also on the human nutrition, you know, very weak demand. So Latin America definitely on the weak side, but all other regions have actually done pretty well. We're seeing in our food and beverage part of the business good dynamic, particularly with our premix. So that is remaining very resilient. And if I focus on your question on North America, there in the past we were a bit struggling with some of the dietary supplement segments. And this quarter we're seeing it's heading in the right direction. So it's a bit more steady for the first quarter. So what we're seeing is overall a pretty good picture on the human nutrition and on animal nutrition, very robust markets if we put Brazil aside.
Okay, and so you see a stabilization in the U.S. on the supplement markets. You have reached the bottom there.
Well, indeed, it does seem that certainly on the multivitamins, this is looking quite stable. And as you know, the omega-3 fish oil was a subsegment where we have seen some sort of downward trend. That seems to be stabilizing as well. So this quarter, certainly more positive insights. And I would like to highlight here, of course, that iHealth, our B2C business, is continuing to grow very well. So together, it's actually a positive picture.
Okay, and this positive picture can continue in the coming months. This is like a normalized positive picture, normalized for fluctuations in orders and deliveries.
Yes, this is not. Okay. This is putting aside the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't manage the business on a quarter by quarter, and some quarters you do have favorable or unfavorable cutoff. But indeed, my comments are taking that aside, more the underlying business conditions.
Okay, thank you. Another question. Mr. Sijbesma highlights the global socio-economic volatility. You have already highlighted some issues in Brazil. What other effects of the so-called socio-economic volatility are important for DSM? What negative effects have you encountered?
Well, we are more flagging this because, of course, we're very aware that these are interesting times, certainly from a political standpoint, whether it be in Europe or North America and you know, potentially the tensions in Asia as well. Now, how that will translate into the economic, macroeconomic indicators is what we're watching very carefully. For one, foreign exchange is something that we're seeing increased volatility. For now, it is still broadly favorable for us. A strong dollar is favorable, and so is a strong Brazilian real. But that could reverse, and you know, the different milestones from political point of view could have an impact, certainly on currency, and then, you know, at some point on GDP. So we're just flagging it as an overall caution, rather than a specific one. But having said that, you know, we're quite confident to deliver on our outlook as stated in the press release.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, Mr. Hans Verbraken, Financiële Dagblad. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, Geraldine. I have a question about your very strong first quarter. You said you had a very strong quarter. Is it? Do you think about higher goals for 2017 as a whole, as you did also for the financial year 2016?
Okay, so yes, I think we do call it a very strong first quarter, I think deservedly, if you look at the numbers. Having said that, of course, it's only one quarter. And as I tried to flag in my opening comments, we did have some helpful cutoffs, et cetera, during the period. Now, we also are aware that, you know, over the year, the comps will be getting tougher. So it's...
The
comparative figures, sorry.
Yes.
So Q1 last year was the lower quarter, so we know that through the year, this will become a harder year-on-year comparison, and therefore we are confident with our outlook, but it's really too early to be making any adjustments for the full year.
Okay, and your working capital as percentage of the sales didn't improve. It was 18.2 in the first quarter 2016, and it is the same in 2017. Of course, you have also more sales, but I think you are trying to improve this ratio.
Absolutely. In fact, the best ratio to look at is the average operating working capital over the period. And I was probably said it a bit too fast in my opening comments. This ratio has improved. So it was 24.4% last year for Q1, and now it's become 24.0. So it's heading in the right direction.
Okay. Yes.
Quite clear that this is like running a marathon. It's not a sprint. These are things that you move over time, and quarterly figures are often, you know, not massively representative. You have to take running averages, etc. But it remains a big focus in order to, you know, lighten our balance sheet. Now, the good news is if you look at our return on capital employed, our ROCE, that is also a nice step up to 11.3% compared to 9.8% on the like-for-like period. And that really is the aim of the game, is to make this KPI move in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
There are no further questions. Please continue.
Okay. In that case, then, Geraldine, do you have any closing remarks to make before we finish the call?
Yes, Steve, thanks. First of all, I would like to thank you all for your time. In short, I think it's quite clear that Q1 has been a very good start to the year for all our businesses, delivering strong growth, good earnings, and good cash generation. We remain fully focused on executing our strategy, and we are confident that our 2017 targets will be delivered on per our objectives. And with that, thank you all.
Thank you very much indeed, Geraldine. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes our conference call for this morning. Thanks to you all for joining us, and I wish you a very good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you.